you like movies? Then Netflix is the place for you. Would you like to support this podcast? Use the red stamp-shaped Netflix affiliate banner link in the show notes at TruckerTomPodcast.com for a free trial and instantly begin streaming movies right to your computer or TV set-top box. Tango Tango Papa 1448, December 28, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you, I guess it's late this evening, early this morning, from home once again. been doing pretty much a whole lot of, I guess you'd say, either nothing or kind of relaxing the past few days, just sort of hanging out here at the house most of the time with my parents. Who are here for the next couple of days, and sort of watching a lot of Netflix stuff as, you know, just sort of relaxing, basically. So today I had an eye exam appointment up in Bella Vista. So I got up this morning and headed up there and got the eye exam. It's an annual eye exam. Get it usually it's in December right after Christmas. And then I had lunch with my friend Gene, who actually works for that eye doctor. He's an optometrist, Dr. Yose. And so afterwards, came home and then kind of turned on the television and got in the recliner and started watching stuff. So I'm sort of enjoying not having to have all these deadlines all the time. Make the deadlines. It seems like that's all I do anymore at work with all these just-in-time loads. It's a constant stream of making deadlines day in and day out. Deadline to go pick a load up, deadline to go, or, you know, to deliver the load. And that seems to be just never ending. Goes on day after day after day. And I think more than anything else, it sort of takes maybe a little bit of an emotional toll, because I get to the point where I, you know, by just doing my job and meeting all those deadlines and managing my time, so, you know, which my time I have to manage it very tightly and adhere to a pretty rigid schedule, I end up kind of just wanting to sleep after the fact and, you know, not having much more time than to just do my job and to sleep. And to do my job and to sleep, and so on and so forth. So it's nice to get away from that. And so I've just been doing a whole lot of nothing the past couple of days. So my vacation. I'm taking my actual vacation time scheduled to go back to work on January 10th. And so I'm still planning on driving down to South Texas, basically and visit my parents down there, probably head down there on Thursday. So that, you know, that's when they're heading. Now, I don't know. It's going to take them a while to get there. So I don't know. I may probably will just leave and, you know, follow them down there. And so that should be kind of a leisurely trip down there. And then, of course, I'll stay down there a number of days. And then once the 10th begins to approach, January 10th starts to roll around, then I'll come back home and allow myself some time to sort of recuperate from the trip back, because it's a fairly long, it's like 850 miles roughly, trip back. So I'll allow myself enough time to get back and to have a couple of days to just relax once I'm back and get ready to go back to work. I've got several things here, but before we get into that, I want to mention the advertisers. First of all, dog.com. You can go to truckertompodcast.com and look in the show notes for this episode. You'll find a couple of different discount options for dog.com. Dog.com's got a bunch of products specifically for dogs, including the Frontline product, which I used to use when I had a dog. Frontline pretty much it does eliminate flea and tick problems. And it makes not only the dog's quality of life better, but makes a human's quality of life better too. If like my dog liked to spend half of her time in the house, and if she had the flea and tick problem, then and there was no way that I could get rid of it, then I wouldn't have been able to allow her to come into the house. So with the Frontline product, it became possible to let her in the house with total confidence that there would be no fleas and ticks that she'd be bringing in. And at the same time, she spent a good half of her time outside or more, she was completely immune basically to fleas and ticks. Even though at certain times of the year here in Northwest Arkansas, fleas and ticks can be a real problem, especially during more dry summers. Fleas and ticks can be a real problem for some reason. They seem to thrive when the weather gets very dry. They sell that plus a bunch of other stuff there at dog.com. Again, just go to truckertompodcast.com. You'll see a couple of banner links that have a couple of different discount options that will take you over to dog.com and apply those particular discounts. Also mention ShoeBuy.com. ShoeBuy.com has just about every type of shoe that you could, shoe, boot, motorcycle boot, cowboy boot, that you could possibly imagine, plus a bunch of other apparel. And you can use the discount code TRUCK, T-R-U-C-K, on checkout and get a discount. And by the way, ShoeBuy.com will also ship to APO, FPO addresses. A lot of websites won't do that. So that's one thing, one of the things that sets ShoeBuy.com apart from many other e-commerce websites that are selling shoes and other, you know, other types of clothing and apparel items. The other advertiser I want to mention is Peikoff.com, P-E-I-K-O-F-F.com. Leonard Peikoff was friends with Ayn Rand for over 30 years. Of course, Ayn Rand she's a philosopher that developed the philosophy of objectivism. And so Leonard Peikoff is sort of an expert in the philosophy, Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism. And so he takes emailed questions and makes a podcast out of it. You can go to iTunes and Just type in into the search, into the iTunes store, Peekoff, P-E-I-K-O-F-F, and you'll find that podcast. And so I'm kind of, as I've mentioned before, I've downloaded all of the episodes of that, and so I'm kind of slowly making my way through those. I don't agree with everything that he says, but it's a rather, objectivism is a rather interesting philosophy. So, anyway, what I have here, I've probably got more stuff than I can get through in this podcast, so I'm going to have to save some of this stuff. First of all, I want to go through, I'm going to play a couple of trailers for some of the stuff that I've been watching on Netflix. The first one I'm going to play is not really something that I would have necessarily sought out were it not for the fact that my parents were here and my dad likes to watch Westerns, and sometimes, you know, he's seen most of them, and of course they don't make many new ones, and once in a while they'll come up with one, but a new one, but there are a lot of older ones. And so was looking on Netflix for Westerns, and of course Netflix has got a bunch of different Westerns on there, a lot of older stuff. And so ended up finding one that he had never seen. It's called The Ranger, The Cook, and A Hole in the Sky. And it's got the actor Sam Elliott in it. I ended up sitting and watching it too. And, it was kind of an interesting little story, entertaining, nothing really earth-shattering about it, just some, kind of decent entertainment, and I did find myself enjoying watching it. So here is the trailer for The Ranger, The Cook, and A Hole in the Sky.
Make it 10.
Sorry, partner, but you're going to have to throw away your hands. I do believe you got an extra card.
Who, me?
Yeah, you. You got 6 cards in your hand. You must have had that extra card up your sleeve just waiting for a big pot like this one.
Okay, so that was sort of that was the trailer that they had on Amazon.com Video On Demand. That's where I got that from. So it gives you a little piece of the movie there. But as I say, I did enjoy that. Now, another one that we watched right after that is called Geronimo, An American Legend. And this was made, I believe, in 1992. So, and this is they tried to make this, I think, is and they used period costumes, and they tried to, fairly closely follow the story of Geronimo. So, sort of the capture of Geronimo. So here's that trailer.
We are looking for Geronimo.
When I was young, the White Eye came and wanted the land of my people. When their soldiers burnt our villages, we moved to the mountains. When they took our food, we ate thorns. When I took a wife, they killed her and my 2 little girls. But in our hearts, we never surrendered.
We are charged with bringing in the renegade Apache, Geronimo. We will accomplish this task. We will succeed.
A lot of white eyes want to see Geronimo hanged for murder.
Not murder. War.
At a crossroads in our nation's past. At the edge of a new frontier.
I hear you and Geronimo are friendly. Can you find Geronimo, talk to him?
I thought so once. There's no way to be sure now.
The fate of a man called Geronimo.
He's a warrior. Every bit born in battle.
Would determine the destiny of a land called America.
I want you to find Geronimo and make him this proposal.
I don't think you or the government intend to keep this promise.
Great, Geronimo. Well, I think you're nothing but a murdering rat bastard.
I'd ride on if I were you, sir. You seem to have provoked the hostiles.
You don't love who you're fighting for, and you don't hate who you're fighting against.
Perhaps I could learn to hate with the proper vigor from you, Val.
Jason Patrick.
Trying to make a country here. Todd.
Robert Duvall.
How's that wound, Mr. Seaver?
Which one? Got it here, 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 here. Hell, I'm in real good. Ain't slowing me down none.
Gene Hackman.
Graceful retirement for the general who could not catch Geronimo.
And Wes Studi as Geronimo.
I am Geronimo, an Apache. Who are you?
Just a man. Like you.
Geronimo, an American legend. Directed by Walter Hill.
Okay, so there was the trailer for Geronimo, an American legend. Now, one thing I'll mention about this Geronimo, an American legend, it had a very nice soundtrack. But the problem, I don't know, they had the dialogue mixed a little bit too low in the overall mix, and whoever put together the soundtrack tried to make it as dynamic as possible, so if you had the thing kind of turned up loud enough so that you could hear the dialogue clearly enough, then all of a sudden they would cut into these really loud fight scenes, and the music would get very loud, and the drums and what have you, and it was pretty extreme. So I don't know, whoever put that soundtrack together really didn't do it as well as they could have. Obviously, they were going for a certain effect, you know, where you could get very loud with the music and the sound effects, but it made it difficult to kind of follow the dialogue, particularly for my dad. You know, my dad's a little bit hard of hearing, and he has a hard time kind of hearing dialogue anyway, and so it was a little difficult. So I had to turn that up fairly loud, and there was a couple of times where it was just really, it was overwhelmingly loud. But in any case, it was very, very interesting movie, and you know, and it was interesting for the fact that it was historically accurate. It brings to light sort of the Native American problem, and to this day we have people living on reservations. You know, now obviously now they don't have to stay there, but back then when they came up with this reservation system, at first they were just confining these people, these different Indian tribes or Native American tribes, to particular pieces of land, and they had to have permission to leave. And they were, you know, the idea was to make farmers out of them, which this really isn't taught in school. History is not taught in school. And, so it's very you know, if you can watch dramatizations like this, movies, dramatizations that are attempting to be historically accurate, even though they're sort of dramatizing everything, if they can be historically accurate, you can really learn history. I don't know. It's unfortunate what happened, and you know, the problem is, you know, you can begin, you know, you can watch something like this and begin to take sides and say, well, the U.S. government was unjust in what it did with the Native Americans, and you know, kind of overrunning, you know, taking their land away from them, and so on and so forth. But it's our ancestors did it. We today, anybody alive today, didn't do that. Our ancestors did it, and the problem is that if you try to make amends for something, particularly if it's the people that didn't even do it, that weren't even involved in it, that weren't even born whenever the injustices took place, it just creates new. It's just a new injustice. And so the only solution to deal properly with injustice is to not resent it when it happens. And if you do that in the proper way, you'll find a solution to it. But resenting injustice simply creates a new injustice. And it extends the problem. It makes it worse. Now you can look at the Native American population today, particularly you go to the areas of the country where there are still people living on reservations. I think in, you know, like in Wyoming and Montana, there are some areas where there's a lot of poverty, and those are like inner city ghettos, basically, except they're rural. They're rural ghettos. And you've got people that are drinking, and of course they have government. They're getting government checks, and you know, which ends up as sort of like a welfare, permanent welfare system. They're getting their quote unquote Indian money, and it's like a welfare system that they're on, and it robs them of their incentive, etc., etc. It's a terrible thing that happens to people. And of course, people are very good at sort of replicating their parents, and if their parents are dysfunctional, then the dysfunction continues to replicate, and the only very few people actually escape that. There are very few people really are actually able to over time escape their parents' dysfunction, and it's certainly possible to do that, but you have to, as an individual, you have to have a willingness and a desire. You have to have the desire to give up resentment and to get over the injustice, give up resentment, and then you as an individual can begin to move forward. But if you hold on to what happened in the past, even though, you know, it was it was all our ancestors that did these things, if you continue to hold on to that and to continue to become bitter and even more bitter about it, and assume the quote unquote the man is holding you down, etc., etc., the problem never resolves itself, and it simply creates new injustice. And it doesn't. That's really I've just described the history of the human race. You know, because you could go back to. If you want to go back in history to medieval Europe, you know, and you had all these different groups, kind of attacking each other and so on and so forth, and really. You know, of course, nowadays the Vikings and all these different groups, they're just names, and they One of them invaded the other, and then the Visigoths and all these, there's dozens of them that fought back and forth and so on and so forth, and overran each other over time, and the emotion is removed. But they're just names, and particularly the way they're presented in if you're in a history class of any sort, the way they're presented, it's incredibly boring, and nobody really gains anything from it. Knowing all this stuff, unless it begins to come to life, and then you can understand where these people were making their mistake. And they made their mistake when they resented injustice. You resent injustice. You become unjust yourself. You commit injustice to somebody else, and and it ends up you're actually transmitting it to future generations. You're transmitting the injustice to future generations. You got to get over it, regardless of everybody. We all come into the world, facing whatever our particular injustice is, or family dysfunction is, dysfunctional situation where we find ourselves born into, and we've got to get over that. We just get over it. Otherwise, we're bound to just. Eventually, we're going to, the only thing that in this world that does get better is technology, and knowledge and technology gets better. We invent more efficient ways of killing each other. And ultimately, if we're left to our own devices, we'll ultimately kill each other. There won't be a single human being left. And so in any case, it's this Geronimo in American Legends, very interesting, because it does give you a little slice of the real American history. So anyway, I also want to go through the top 10 box office. Now, this was for the... this was the week ending December 24. So, number one on the list is a movie called Little Fockers, F-O-C-K-E-R-S. Now, I never did, I know there's been several, at least one or two other movies that were about the Fockers, F-O-C-K-E-R-S. And I never have watched any of those. I guess they're supposedly comedies, and I was just sort of offended, not really offended, but put off by the name, because obviously the name F-O-C-K-E-R-S is designed to, sort of conjure up the F word. So I don't know. That just didn't appeal to me, and so I never have really gone out of my way to watch any of these movies. In any case, here is the trailer for Little Fockers.
This Christmas, Santa isn't the only one coming to town.
Hey, what's a good word, Grandpa Jack?
This is Jack Burns.
Yeah, I know. I could tell from the caller ID.
Dina and I will be there in approximately 18 seconds.
I'm so excited to see those little fockers.
Gobble, gobble, everybody. It's turkey time.
Jack, if you do the honors.
You're the turkey carver now, Greg.
Thank you, Jack. It's an honor.
I got myself an obsession.
I'm watching you.
Well, I have eyes, too. I'll be watching you, watching me.
You got to give a little love, give a little love. Go on, just do it. You can't abuse it. Give a little love.
I want you to represent our new drug, Sustengo.
It's an erectile dysfunction medicine.
You know any sexually frustrated old dudes?
Hello, Greg. You mind explaining this?
Jack, did you take one of those pills?
What do you mean?
If you've had that for more than 4 hours, you got to get to an ER and get you a shot.
There's no way I'm going to an emergency room with this thing. You need to stick me, and you need to stick me now.
I'm not comfortable giving you... I'm not going to... No.
Little fuckers.
I'd like a few minutes alone with him just to erase what he saw from his memory.
No.
You're not going to erase my son's memory.
Give a little love!
Okay, so that was the trailer for Little Fockers. It was number one. It had a total of... well, this doesn't make sense. It must have came out in the middle of the week. Anyway, I'll just give you the cumulative. You know, it was in release for 1 week. $45,083,800. It's in 3,536 theaters. Theater average was $8,719. Number two on the list is a movie called True Grit. It's a remake of an old John Wayne movie. The total take so far is $36,068,000. It's also been in release for about 1 week. It's in 3,047 theaters. Theater average was $8,155. And so here is the trailer for the new version of True Grit.
Mr. Cogburn, in your 4 years as U.S. Marshal, how many men have you shot?
Shot? Or killed?
Let us restrict it to killed so that we may have a manageable figure.
Mr. Cogburn?
What do you want, girl?
I'm looking for the man who killed my father. The man's name is Tom Chaney, and I need somebody to go after him.
What's your name?
My name is Maddie Ross.
Are you some kind of law?
I'm a Texas Ranger.
I know Chaney. It is at least a two-man job taking him alive.
Marshal Cogburn? Can we depart this afternoon?
We?
I am going with you.
Congratulations. You've graduated from marauder to wet nurse.
He's being followed.
What do we do, Marshal?
You missed your shot, Cogburn.
Just let this go.
I thought you were going to say the sun was in your eyes. That is to say, your eye.
You got a lot of experience with bounty hunters, do you?
That is a silly question. I am 14.
You can run on for a long time.
Time for you to go home.
I don't like you. I will not go back, not without Chaney, dead or alive.
Snarly, you gotta cut you down.
Chaney's here! Help me, Marshal!
Now what, Cogburn?
Them boys, don't think about the wrath that's about to set down on you. Chaney and his gang are rough lot.
I do not regret shooting your father. I will kill this girl!
Biggest mistake you ever made.
Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Help me?
I can do nothing for you, son.
Okay, so there's the trailer for the new version, the remake version of True Grit. And so I'm going to go ahead and play the... original True Grit trailer. Of course, that was starring John Wayne, and this is from 1969.
Says Life magazine, True Grit is good enough for me. It's good enough for you, and if it isn't good enough for some movie company, then the free enterprise system is really going to hell. Move along!
They tell me you're a man with True Grit.
Well, what do you want? Speak up.
Boy, you wrinkled the paper. It's pretty loose because your makings are too dry. I'm looking for Tom Chaney.
Well, Who's he?
He's the man that shot and killed my father, Frank Ross.
Says the New York Times, as touching as it is irreverently amusing.
Marshal Lester Cogburn and I are going after the murderer, Tom Cheney.
How did you light on that greasy vagabond?
They say he has grit.
He's a notorious thumper. He's not a man I would care to share a bed with.
Nor would I.
And now, Paramount Pictures presents the Hal Wallace production, True Grit. Starring John Wayne as Rooster Cogburn, the most colorful character he's ever played.
If I smelled as bad as you, I wouldn't live near people.
Kim Darby as Matty Ross.
My God, she reminds me of me.
Glenn Campbell in his first big screen role.
A little earlier, I gave some thought to stealing a kiss from you, although you are very young. And you're unattractive to boot. But now I'm of a mind to give you 5 or 6 good licks with my belt.
Well, one would be as unpleasant as the other.
True Grit, a slip of a girl, a pot-bellied, one-eyed Western Marshal, and a Texas Ranger wearing breeches a size too big.
What are you doing?
Looking for sign.
You couldn't see it if you saw it.
They're trailing the most surprised killer the West ever knew.
I'm here to take you back to Fort Smith and hang you.
And I think I will not go. Now, how do you like that?
Now, you mean to say that you won't go with me on your own free will?
You just got it the other way around. Now, you will follow me. I didn't think you'd do it.
Says Saturday Review, True Grit is lively, uproarious, high adventure.
I mean to kill you in 1 minute, Ned, or see you hanged in Fort Smith at Judge Parker's convenience. Which will it be?
I call that bold talk for a one-eyed fat man.
No grit, Rooster Cogburn. Not much.
Okay, so there was the original trailer from 1969 for the original True Grit. And, you know, kind of playing those side by side, of course I've seen the 1969 version, but playing those side by side, obviously the 2010 remake, you know, it's not a comedy. It didn't, you know, the newer version does not sound, there's no comedic elements in it. Whereas in this 1969 movie starring John Wayne and Glenn Campbell, it, you know, they obviously, they were going for some comedic, a lot of comedic sort of elements to it. So it's very different, the 2010 version. Number three on the list is Tron Legacy. It has been in release for a couple of weeks. It's in 3,451 theaters. Theater average is $5,549. Gross to date is $87,373,703. Number four on the list is The Chronicles of Narnia. The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. It's been in release for 3 weeks. The total this week was $9,478,043. It's in 3,350 theaters. Theater average is $2,829. Gross to date, $62,597,030. Number five on the list is Yogi Bear. It's been in release for 2 weeks. The take this week was $7,835,000. It's in 3,515 theaters. The theater average was $2,229. Gross to date, $35,000,000. $820,000. Number six on the list is The Fighter. It's been in release for 3 weeks. The take this week was $7,605,000. It's in 2,511 theaters. Theater average is $3,028. Gross to date, $26,680,000. Number seven on the list is Tangled. It's been in release for 5 weeks. The take this week was $6,427,816. It's in 2,582 theaters. Theater average was $2,489. Gross to date, $143,695,323. And number eight on the list is a new movie. It's called Gulliver's Travels. It's in 2,546 theaters. The theater average is $2,477. And so here is the trailer for Gulliver's Travels.
Give me your press badge. No way, you're not my dad. Then I shall take it by force.
Oh, he's my brother.
Then you shouldn't have made out with him.
What do you hope to get out of being in the mailroom?
I hope to get out of being in the mailroom.
You're hired.
How long have you had this crush on the travel editor?
On Darcy? No way, dude.
How's your day going?
Really good. Just really, really good.
Have a good one.
You too.
Got something.
Yeah, me too.
Gulliver, you're not my boss anymore.
It's impossible. You just got here.
I'm your boss now. It's over for you. Never really gonna get any bigger than this.
You think I don't have plans? I got big plans. I got a writing sample I've been working on. It's dynamite.
I had no idea you wrote. I think I have the perfect fluff piece to start you off with. There's a guy who claims he has the secret to the Bermuda Triangle. So what do you say?
We'll see you in 3 weeks with a story that's gonna blow your mind.
You just follow that dot, and you'll find yourself in a triangle.
Done.
Okay. Where's the clutch?
Not a great big hairy beast.
What?
Pound it with your fist.
Woo-hoo! Don't shave up my sideburns. I need those mutton chops.
So that was the trailer for Gulliver's Travels. That's obviously a family type of comedy movie. Let's see. So number nine on the list is Black Swan. It's been in release for 4 weeks. Take this week was $6 million. $254,986. It's in 1,466 theaters. The theater average is $4,266. The gross to date is $28,689,060. And number 10 on the list is The Tourist. It's been in release for 3 weeks. The take this week was $5,375,000. It's in 2,756 theaters. The theater average is $1,950. Gross to date, $40,850,000. And so that was the top 10 box office for this week. I've also got a piece of audio, and I don't know how much of this I'm going to play. It's of George Soros. We hear a lot about George Soros, kind of the evil billionaire George Soros that's you know, he's done some bad things as far as kind of manipulating currencies and making money out of that. And, you know, there are a lot of people, including me, that think he's sort of pulling Obama's puppet strings. You know, Obama's sort of a really super externalized person that's talented, obviously, but he's externalized, and therefore he's totally manipulatable. And George Soros is probably Dr. Evil, you know, kind of behind the scenes, you know, pulling the puppet strings, and Obama dances to Soros's, you know, every time Soros pulls, some strings, Obama jumps to attention. But anyway, I thought it was interesting. Soros was being interviewed at, I believe it was at Berkeley. I've got this off of YouTube, and so I'm going to go ahead and play some of this and maybe do a little stop-start on it and comment on it. So here's George Soros being interviewed at Berkeley.
Obviously, and we talked about this a little earlier, there it could be said that you, in a way, by entering the world of electoral politics, are an oligarch.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, an oligarch on the Democratic rather than the Republican side. What's the rebuttal to that? That suggestion?
Well, first of all, I like the philanthropolitic. That's a very good term. You know, there's been a lot of discussion of my sort of political donations and the fact that I'd been supporting and continue to support campaign finance reform.
Now, let me go ahead and interrupt that. He said right there, I don't know if you caught it, he said he liked the description philanthropolitic as opposed to a philanthropist. He has this idea that he's being a philanthropist, but he's manipulating politics. And I'm certain in his mind he thinks that he's doing the right thing. He has all this money, and he is kind of manipulating politics. And so that's something to keep in mind. But he's got it twisted in his head so that he thinks he's really doing something that's right. And so let's go ahead and listen to this.
Now, I think that my activities are fully in compliance, not only with the letter of the law, but also with the spirit, because the campaign finance was basically designed to deny access to special interests. And these organizations that I support, they were there before I started supporting them. They were deliberately not regulated by the campaign finance. And the Federal Election Commission reaffirmed this.
Let me interrupt again. Who is George Soros to try to deny certain groups from having political access? Just think about that for a minute. Now, you know, I'm a conservative. I make no apologies for it. I am a conservative. But yet, you know, I don't want to stifle someone on the left. I want, you know, if somebody's out there on the left, I want them to state their piece. I want them to be able to, you know, come right out and say what they think and try to back up what they say and try to convince people. I want them to do it. I don't want them to, you know, to be stifled. You know, I'll try to defeat them, by putting my own ideas out there, and you know, I say what I think and tell you why I think that way, in as reasonable a manner as possible, but I do not want to shut people up. I don't want to try to deny people access. And yet here's George Soros with his, you know, which I think he's got some ill-gotten gains, you know, with selling, you know, currency manipulation and what have you. I think in the country of France, he's completely banned. They won't let him back in the country. You know, China, you know, there's some problems with China. China doesn't want him. And, you know, he caused some real problems with Great Britain's currencies in the past. And so he's, this guy is not really a good guy. And yet here he is trying to deny certain groups of, you know, in American politics, he's trying to deny certain groups from having political access. And so, anyway, let's go ahead and listen to some more of this, keeping that in mind.
Recently. So in other words, I'm complying with the letter. But I think that the purpose was not to take money out of politics, because that's an impossibility, but to deny special interests access. And if you support these organizations, you get no access. It doesn't get you anything. And because of that, it's very difficult to get support for it. I'm trying to get other people to contribute, and it isn't easy.
Well, you get paid back, I suppose, in political currency, a currency of being a citizen. Do you consider that to be a legitimate...
Well, interest? I'm doing it out of principle. And so I think that this is in accordance. Now, nevertheless, I think that in view of the experience with this election, the issue should be re-examined. Is the present regulation good? Is it good to separate, let's say, soft money from the party? Or should, in fact, soft money be allowed to go through the party? And should there be more free access to media? I think that actually giving more free access to media, which does not interfere with the First Amendment, because after all the airwaves are a public good, would be a much better way to reduce the influence of money. In Brazil, for instance, they had elections, and a very large amount of airtime was allocated to the candidates.
So here he is. Now this is from 2008, I believe. But here he is saying, "Oh, we got to reduce the influence of money," and he's using his own money to try to reduce the influence of money. You know, that's hypocrisy. But of course he's out there on the left, and those people oftentimes will accuse the other side of doing things that they're doing. Accuse others of what you do, said Karl Marx. But people do it, you know, you didn't really need Karl Marx to come up with that concept. People do that naturally. But, you know, so anyway, let's go ahead and listen to some more of this.
A very good system, so I wish that would be considered in this country.
Well, that raises the interesting question of whether we in this country don't need some more robust form of public broadcasting, non-commercial broadcasting.
Yes, and NPR, for instance, one of the few institutions left in our media that is really giving good information.
And would you are you inclined to support something like NPR? I mean, do you think it plays that critical role?
Well, I'm not financially supporting NPR. But I support it in principle.
Yes, principle and interest. The world is now really intertwined in a way as never before, and global markets, such as they are paramount. Do you think this system has enough integrity to survive, given the weaknesses of sovereign structure and nation states?
No, you have. Currently some kind of a distortion in globalization, because you've got global markets, but political arrangements remain firmly based on the principle of sovereignty. And because of the greatly increased interdependence, what goes on inside other countries is of vital interest to us and to other, to everybody in the world. So what kind of regime you have in Afghanistan, let's say, has a bearing on our security. And that poses an unsolved problem. What do you do about internal political developments in countries? Because most of the poverty and misery in the world today is due to bad government of one sort or another. Repressive regimes, corrupt regimes.
Sorry, I disagree. What causes poverty, at its root, it's a poverty of values. It's a poverty of morals. And it has the, you know, the effects that these people are always looking at. Oh, these people are in poverty and it's the government's fault. You know, and oftentimes, you know, once a system is established and you've got people in an, you know, kind of in an immoral state, and then you've got people in the government sort of profiting out of their decay, profiting out of their misery, then obviously you can point and you can say, oh, look at those evil people in government. And they are. I'm not defending them. But the problem is, at its root, how many moral people are there? And I mean, when I say moral people, I mean genuine people, people with real identities, not people that are just sort of phony, phony plastic people that that are sort of products of their environment. But you know, because a lot of people, you they're born in America, they, you know, you think, oh, they're Americans. Well, if they were born in Borneo, they'd probably be cannibals. You know, and or you know, if they were born in India, then they'd be, you know, they'd be Indians. Or if they were born in wherever, they'd be, you know, they'd take on the culture that they were born into. You know, but sort of externalized. That's really what culture is kind of an externalized, you know, sort of an externalized identity. But what you have to have is real moral people. You know, you've got to have a certain percentage of people that are truly moral, truly that really have genuine identities, and that are not externalized, and that really know the difference for themselves between right and wrong. And if you don't have enough of those people, if you've got too many of the other kind of people, the externalized people, then those people can be scammed. And so the scammers come along, the government turns into mafia, you end up with a political mafia, and you know, then you end up with some sort of dictatorship, a dictatorship of one form or another. So, anyway, let's go ahead and listen to some more of this.
Failed states and so on. What do you do about that? And that is the great unsolved problem that we need to address.
Well, talk about that. I mean, what is the right balance between sovereignty on the one hand and internationalism and maybe world government on the other hand, which, as you well know, is a real antichrist
for
many people in this country and elsewhere in the world?
Well, I think the principle of sovereignty is the prevailing principle, but it is becoming modified because there are some universal principles that begin to limit the concept of absolute sovereignty. So I think if you look, the sovereignty is sort of an anachronistic or a slightly atavistic idea.
Let me interrupt again. So he's talking about, you know, like national sovereignty, different countries having sovereignty. But national sovereignty is simply an extension of individual sovereignty. Now, theoretically, you know, you're born in the United States of America, and we've got the Constitution of the United States. Theoretically, you're a sovereign. You have sovereignty. Now, that does not mean that you can go out and just, you know, commit murder or rape, rob, pillage, whatever. You, in order to be, you know, this concept of sovereignty to work, you have to have, you know, natural self-restraint. And I believe there is such a thing as natural self-restraint. But if you've got that natural self-restraint, then you can, you're free. Your real sovereignty revolves around you being free to follow your conscience, to be who you were created to be, and not simply a product of, you know, what the government says you should be, or what your neighbors say you should be, or whatever your culture says you should be. Your natural sovereignty, you're free to be yourself, to do what you want to, you know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, etc., as long as you don't step on, you know, the other people's toes in the process, or, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, but when you start talking about limiting that sovereignty, you're talking about slavery, imposing slavery. And so this idea that you're going to have a world government, well, you're going to have a worldwide dictatorship. You're going to have a worldwide slave system, a slave and master system. And, you know, with somebody, and of course, George Soros envisions him as himself being sort of in charge of that sort of system. He's going to be one of the masters, one of the slave masters.
Goes back to where you had kings and subjects, and the kings ruled over their subjects. And then, in the French Revolution, the king was killed, and the people took possession of sovereignty. And that's modernity. That gave rise to the nation state. But the elected government or non-elected governments very often abuse the sovereignty that belong to the people. And in that case, there is a need for the international community to intervene. And that concept needs to be elaborated. It is slowly being developed. There was a report which argued that there is a responsibility to protect, that when the people are abused by their own rulers and human rights are abused, that there is an international responsibility to intervene. That there was a declaration in Warsaw in the year 2000 which established the principle that it is in the interest of all democracies to help the development of democracy in other countries. But this is a principle that is worth that is an empty statement, like so many principles. But to breathe life into it, I think, is what is now needed. So I think this is the direction that we ought to move, and I think the United States ought to lead that movement. However, this administration has led us in a very different direction, because they act on the belief that international relations are relations of power and not law, that international law merely serves to legitimize whatever power has accomplished. And since we are so powerful, we have a right to impose our will on the world. And that, I think, is tremendously dangerous, because in fact we are very powerful. And this is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and cut that off. And you can find that on YouTube. That's just look up George Soros and you can find that. And so basically what he's talking about, what he's doing and what he's actually helped to accomplish with the election of Obama in the past 2 years of the Obama administration, cutting the United States down to size. We're too powerful. And so what's Obama, you know, been doing? Oh, spend money. Borrow money, print money, spend money, reduce the U.S. power in the world, spend us into poverty, spend us down to the point where we're powerless, you know, where our power is vastly reduced, and then we're cut down to size, and that makes it more fair for the rest of the world. Cuts our power down, and that's the way these people think. That's how these people think, you know, and you can't blame them for thinking that way. They're, you know, for whatever reason, you know, that's the way they think. We have to stop them, you know, and the only way that you can stop people like that dead in their tracks is having enough people that are paying attention in a representative democracy like the United States. Enough people have to pay attention to politics and get involved with it, and you have to have a moral, you know, the basic thing that kind of puts a stop to it, unreasonable government, is more morality. If you have a moral, you know, just individually, if you have a moral person, there are, you know, some people will, you know, people are just, you know, in an encounter, you know, with somebody that's really moral, if you have somebody that's trying to, let's say, you know, get their way, or they're trying to do something illegal, they're immediately put off. And I believe a genuinely moral person, you know, someone with a real identity, you know, and not externalized, but a genuine person, you know, it puts off almost like they put off a field, and the bad people just naturally sort of stay away. You know, they don't, you know, it's like they're repelled by it. And so you get enough of those people, and it doesn't take a whole lot, but you get enough of those kind of people, you know, and they're not afraid to say what they think and get involved, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and be an influence, you know, put out some influence. Then if you have enough of those people stepping forward and participating, things reverse. But if it goes the other way, as it has been, then you can have people that step in and just kind of take over. The scum rises to the top, and things go to hell. And that's basically what's been happening. So, you know, you have people like, you know, I'm sure George Soros, it sounds like he means well, and I'm sure in his own mind, he thinks, oh, he's doing the right thing by, you know, doing whatever it is he does and buying the influence with politicians that he is. And the only reason he's able to do that is because, it's because there are too many people that are too suggestible. There are too many people that are not genuine. There's too much immorality. And attendant with that, you end up with people that are sort of lost in entertainment. They've got their heads buried in the sand, so on and so forth. And, the general principle is that the more immoral people that you have, or even you as an individual, or me as an individual, the more immoral, you know, look at it on an individual level. Let's say the more immoral that I am, the more suggestible I become, the less genuine I become. And that's just kind of a general principle. And then, you know, you can apply that to individuals. You can apply it to groups of people. And so that's really what's happened to the country. I think that if we really kind of go back and study history, We will see that, you know, particularly you go back to the 30s and the Great Depression and then what happened afterwards. The country was an looking at that, you know, we're not taught this, obviously, in school, but you looking at it, I can see that the country was in extreme danger then of let's say in the 1930s of ending up a communist country. We came pretty close to it, you know, and of course at this point we've actually got a communist president and communists in the Democrat Party. And a lot of people don't want to admit that. You tell them that and they'll start whining and moaning and groaning and say, oh, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. They're not communists. Oh, yes, they are. Show me where they're different. Show me where the policies in the Democrat in today's Democrat Party are any different than the Communist Party. There's no difference at all. So, anyway, as I say, you can find that on YouTube. Just type in George Soros, and a bunch of stuff will pop up. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.